States. Today, I sat across the table from a number of America's toughest competitors. They weren't the Japanese or Koreans or the Germans. They were, in fact, the leaders of some of America's finest businesses. And they were here with me today because they care about American jobs. And they were coming with me to Asia 10 days from now for the same reason, American jobs. The meeting we had today and the mission that we will embark upon soon demonstrates that we will relentlessly pursue our mission to create jobs and restore prosperity for all Americans. Every one of these business leaders knows that right now, during tough times, exports are our strong suit. They know that the Asian market is growing and largely untapped. They also know better than anyone that American goods and services are higher quality and more competitive than ever before. New exports mean new jobs, good jobs. 20,000 new jobs for every billion in new manufactured exports. When the playing field is level, when our trading partners provide U.S. companies the same kind of opportunities that their firms enjoy here, our workers can compete with anybody, anytime, anywhere. And that's not just free trade, that's fair trade. And I will continue to insist upon that kind of relationship with the nations that I visit in January. The changes around the world these last 2 years present a tremendous challenge to all of us. And they also present an extraordinary opportunity to promote democracy, peace, and yes, prosperity. America is a Pacific nation. We have a broad range of interests throughout the region, including important security arrangements and political relationships. During this upcoming trip, we will not neglect those security and political relationships. I know every American cares deeply about the prospects of a freer and safer world. And I also know that America benefits when our citizens and our companies play an active role in world markets. Engagement in the global marketplace affects the prices we pay for goods and services, as well as the strength of a vibrant and growing economy. The kind where everyone who wants to work has a good job at a good wage. And that's why we must stay engaged overseas, because it matters so much right here at home. We want markets that are fully open to American goods and services. And I will stress that we're looking for a true economic partnership on this trip, one of shared responsibilities for promoting open markets and financial services. And then I'll urge them to join us in redoubling their efforts to help all the world's economies, help them grow by achieving a successful conclusion to the Uruguay round of trade negotiations. The U.S. is by far the largest open market in the entire world, and that's been good for the United States, no question about that. But our friends and allies have benefited greatly from this and must share the responsibility for an open trading system. This trip alone obviously will not solve all the trade frictions between our countries. It'll not create a new American export boom overnight. Now, what it will do is demonstrate that trade is a two-way street, that our relationships around the world are important to us, and that in a world more hopeful of a peaceful future than ever before, the United States will continue to lead. This will be the first trip by me to Asia since the end of the Cold War, and so the security concerns will be discussed, but what I've talked about here will be leading the agenda. Now we'll begin to start right here with Helen, then we'll move over here.
And what makes you think you'll succeed with Japan on the trade question, where all of your predecessors have failed? What is your leverage? What are your goals? What has changed?
Well, I was talking to these businessmen today, and each of them, it appears, maybe not every one of them, but most of them have been contacted by those with whom they do business in Japan. And all of them that spoke at the meeting indicated they felt the time was right to move forward in terms of open markets. So there's a climate that I think might be helpful. I'm concentrating here on Japan. It's not only Japan where we have problems. But I think Mr. Miyazawa, the very able Prime Minister of Japan, understands this, understands the need to move forward. So when you talk to the outside experts, I think they're telling me anyway that there is a much better climate. And so we'll see when we get there whether that works. But I am determined. What's that mean?
In terms of retaliation.
Well, we're going over there to try to get some things done, and I don't need to go into exactly. We'll go to the AP, and then we'll start over here because this is a press conference primarily for journalists from other countries that are here. Yeah.
You're talking about a much better climate, but just today, the Japanese Prime Minister Miyazawa closed out the possibility of improving or changing their ban on rice imports. And yesterday, the Korean ambassador said that you shouldn't be pressing Korea at this time on trade disputes because they have their own internal economic problems. Sounds like a lot of intransigence there. How do you expect to accomplish it?
Well, what I expect to do is try to be assisting the American making clear what's at stake in terms of the American market, what's at stake in terms of jobs for the American people, and I wouldn't judge from those two examples that everything's going to be intransigent, but I would say that the trip is to break down intransigence where we find it and have freer and fairer trade, and that message I will carry very, very forcefully. We have shown a lot of forbearance, and I want to see fair play.
Mr. President, you just emphasized the economic partnership. And how much would you be looking for in Tokyo with regard to the auto parts issues while in Tokyo discussing the Japanese leadership?
I'm not sure I would quantify it for you, but there's an area where we should be doing much, much more business. We are good, we are efficient, we have quality, and we should do better in terms of auto parts. So without, you know, setting numbers for you, that is a subject that is going to be on the table. That's a subject where the Japanese have been had some forthcoming statements, as a matter of fact. So now let's see exactly how it's going to work out in practice. We want action in that area.
Well, hold up, sir.
Yeah.
Are you satisfied with the statement by the Japanese auto industry about reaching out to the American auto parts makers in terms of what you just described as economic partnership?
Well, I think the tone of the comments is extraordinarily good. Now I want to see what exactly that means. But yes, let's give credit where credit is due. There's been some forthcoming statements. But what does it mean? What does it mean in terms? I'm going to be talking about what's this mean in terms of American product that has fair and equal access. We got quality products in this field. So, I think in fairness, there have been representations that we can make more progress in that area. Yeah, back here. We'll just start right this row. Three in a row. One, two, three.
Oh, thank you very much.
No, you've got it. One, two, three. Right there. Here we go.
Mr. President, we learned today that you sent a letter to Prime Minister Miyazawa.
Yes.
December 7th. And what was the purpose of this letter? And have you received a response from Prime Minister Miyazawa?
First place, the letter related to Japanese help in finalizing the Uruguay round. All the big trading nations must be involved right up to the hilt in getting a successful conclusion to the Uruguay round of trade. And I can't tell you, I personally haven't seen the response, if there is one. Knowing him, I'm sure there will be a very thorough and forthcoming response, but I haven't seen it through our system yet. Yes?
The fact that you are taking a business delegation with you on this trip clearly demonstrates the closer cooperation that you try to force the American industry for promoting export. But ironically, in the past, however, this is precisely what Japanese government used to have been accused of by many American observers as somewhat unfair government assistance. So I wonder if you, philosophically you feel uncomfortable about what could look like a government intervention into the affairs of the United States.
Good question. The answer is no, I don't feel uncomfortable at all. I think this is long overdue, and we're going there in a constructive spirit. Many of the people that are going with me have done a considerable amount of business in Japan. They know the Japanese market. They have affection and respect for the Japanese people. And so I feel nothing but pride that these successful and strong people will be there to help me make the points that I've made in the opening statement here. Yes. The answer is yes. We still view it that those Soviets will sponsor the talks. Mr. Yeltsin reiterated to Jim Baker, I believe, that they wanted to. That was an agreement. They were very useful, forthcoming, and helpful in bringing about the original conference in Madrid. And then what was the second part, sir?
What's the role of the role of
the United States will continue to have the same role, a catalyst, not a dictating, not attempting to dictate solutions. We want to be an honest broker. And I think the parties see us in that role, and that's the role that we will continue to play at this point.
And do you think the talks between them ended last day?
I was disappointed. Yes. Well, I'm told some progress was made. Don't quiz me on what. But I felt that a lot of time was spent talking about modalities and locations. And obviously, we would have liked to see more progress, and we have shared those observations with the various participants. Right back there, and that finished, and then we'll start over here. Yeah.
Mr. President, what is your opinion about the creation of a Commonwealth of Independent States on the USSR territory? Are you going to give full recognition to this community and to the republics it is of which it comprised? And do you agree that Russia should become a successor of the Soviet Union for international agreements and take its place in the United Nations Security Council?
Well, first on the Commonwealth itself, that is a matter for the various republics to work out. That isn't a matter for the United States to attempt to dictate. We couldn't do it anyway. But what our view has been, engage with democratic reformers, those two key words, those who favor democracy and those who favor reform. And we, Jim Baker on his trip, has been doing that. I have been doing that over the months. And so they will sort all this out. He has talked to them. They've talked to him about recognition. He has made clear that certain steps have to be taken, particularly in this nuclear question, which is vital and where the United States is uniquely qualified to lead, in my view. And so that one has to be done. Peaceful borders is another one. The CSCE principles, which is include human rights and respect for minorities in each of these republics, that's another one. So they're sorting all this out now. It's in the process of being worked out. And then we will treat, as Jim has told them, with this whole question of what the role of the United States is when whatever evolves has evolved. And that would include then on Russia. Again, they have some sorting out between the republics. As you know, the Soviet Union today has three seats, one in the Security Council and then two in addition at the United Nations. Now, they got a lot of sorting out to do as this new Commonwealth is born. And we are not fixing to get into the middle of that until they've gone further with the process. Way back there, and then I am coming over here. I'm looking for those who I might recognize as coming from some of the countries we're visiting, which is hard to do, I'll tell you. All right, well, Maybe that's the way to do this. But anyway, we got a little time. Go ahead.
I'd like to ask about the Middle East also, Mr. President. It's part of the good relations the United States has with Israel and the potential leverage it has. It hasn't been able to convince Israel to stop the settlement activity. Now, the Arabs claim that without a halt to the settlements, there cannot be peace. Now, can the United States do anything more than to say that they are an obstacle to peace and to ask of Israel to stop them in order to promote the idea of peace more energetically?
What we would like to do is see those matters discussed in substance. That's one of the reasons I express frustration about talks that talk only about where the next meeting is going to be. But we have problems that everyone in this room knows, and I think around the world knows, about the settlements, feeling they are an obstacle to peace. And we have made that clear to our Israeli friends. We have problems with some of the Arab positions. The boycott, for example, we have made that clear to some of our friends in that part of the world. So we cannot wave a wand and dictate, but we can make suggestions as to what would facilitate the peace process, and we've tried to do that. Now, where is this voice from Australia? Yeah, we can't have too many voices speaking from Australia. It's two against one. Go ahead. And then we'll get this one on the aisle.
And then, President Bush, can I ask you how you feel about
Well, look, I think everybody knows of my friendship and affection for Bob Hawke, and I'm not one who turns my back on friends. Now, having said that, the process is working. The party has selected a new leader. The foreign policy of the United States has not been and will not be set on individuals. It's set on, in this instance, a historic good relationship between countries. And so I look forward to dealing with the government. I've met Mr. Keating. I know him, respect him, and that's their problem. They'll sort that out. So I would leave it right there and say I'm looking forward very much to the trip. Well, I certainly hope so, and I'm sure I will. I mean, I might say to the Japanese journalists here, I had a good and friendly relationship with Mr. Kaifu. The process moves on. You have another very able man as prime minister. I will dealing primarily with him, but I would just say, any of you guys setting the schedule, I'd like very much to see the former prime minister Kaifu, and I'm sure I will. Yes.
Well, thank you. Are you aware of the Australian Heavy Farmers' anger regarding the export enhancement program? And are
yes.
you meeting with them while you're in Australia as they have left?
I don't know about the schedule. I am aware of it. I think they know that the export program, enhancement program, passed by the Congress is not aimed at Australia. Indeed, I am prepared to tell them what's happened to our own markets in terms of total world market percentage. And I look forward to talking to whoever it is I talk to. I just don't know about the schedule. I don't set the schedule, and I don't know what's going to happen. Korea, right here.
Could you say simply yes or no?
I could, but I seldom do that because I get in trouble when I do that. Now, what's your question?
Do you have nuclear weapons in the Korean Peninsula at the moment? And my follow-up is that, what is your future nuclear policy to that area, regardless you have or you have not nuclear from the percentage?
Well, as you know, we never confirm or deny, and I'm glad I said before you asked me the question, do I answer yes or no? I made a statement, I believe it was in September, about removal of U.S. Tactical nukes and nukes from surface vessels. And I'll just leave it right there. I also heard what the Prime Minister said, and I'm not about to argue with him. So those statements speak for themselves. Yes? We got looking for some Singaporeans around here. So, you're next. I understand.
How important is the ANZUS relationship in this evolving non-nuclear world? And is the U.S. closer to a rapprochement with New Zealand, or do you still want New Zealand to change their anti-nuclear law first?
Well, first place, it troubles me because we have had a strong relationship with New Zealand. And I really, honestly believe there is great, great affection in this country for New Zealanders, and I think there is in New Zealand for the United States. I've been there, and you can sense it, and you can feel it. The difficulty we have had, hopefully, is well on its way to resolution because of the position that I just mentioned to this journalist from Korea. And let's hope now that that the people of New Zealand see this, appreciate that step, and that we can get back to normal.
And answer on the ANZUS relationship, and also.
Well, that requires more than just the U.S., doesn't it? So that'd be a good subject for discussion when I am talking to our friends in Australia. I think the groundwork is there. Because of the forward position that we took. False colors. I thought you were from Singapore. Go ahead. That's close enough. Close enough. Close enough. Go ahead.
is it correct to say that your visit to Singapore will be a sounding board to ASEAN, primarily on trade issues, or is it also related to security and human rights issues?
Good question, and you're right. It is. It does affect the ASEAN area. Our visit. I wish I could go to all those ASEAN countries. I couldn't. I've been to most. But in this case, I can tell you that the visit will be on a wide array of subjects. We are not neglecting, and this is a point I will make to our friends in Singapore and hopefully to the rest of ASEAN, we're not neglecting our security responsibilities. I think there's been some concern about what position the United States will be in when we come out of the Philippines. And I would use this trip to reassure the Singaporean leaders as well as those around that we are not going to pull back. I also think, and this is a broad subject, but I think it is one that should resonate at home. We are not neglecting the Pacific. As we have coped, and I hope with some degree of world leadership with the Middle East, with the changes in the republics, with the unification of Germany, with the evolution in Eastern Europe, I think there has been some feeling in Asia, and you all are the experts on it, that perhaps we are neglecting. And so one of the things about this trip is that we are not We don't intend to, nor will we, neglect our role as one whose largest, as one who's blessed by having the largest trading partners being the Pacific Rim. And so it's partially that. We will have discussions, we always do, of all these other questions that you raise. Yes, in the middle back there. You get the second go around.
What will be your course of action, sir, toward Indonesia now that, through the witness of two American journalists, it has become apparent that there are problems with the human rights in East Timor? And what would be your advice, sir, to the government of Portugal as the administrating power and the future chairman of the EEC to rectify the situation in East Timor?
A lot of discussion is going on the tragedy in East Timor. We have expressed ourselves in terms of the pure human rights part of it, and I don't know that on this trip we will be directly involved in any way in that particular question. We pride ourselves, and I think properly so, in standing up for human rights, and I think we've made clear to the parties that are interested there the U.S. position. I don't know how it'll come out, frankly, at forthcoming meetings. I just can't help you on that. Yes, over there. This one and then this one. Go ahead.
Today the Swedish government recognized Russia, Belarusia, and Ukraine. When will the U.S. do the same?
Well, we're taking these things under advisement. We don't know, can't give you an exact date. I've said what it is, our responsibilities as a, I think I feel a certain custodial responsibility on this whole question of nuclear weapons, non-proliferation. I think we have a disproportionate responsibility for that. And so we want to see these questions that I mentioned to you, mentioned to the gentleman back here, resolved or move well on the way to resolution. Then we, at our time, will make the determination that you ask about, the official stamp of recognition. I've already indicated that as these people self-determine. We are very flexible and open about the question of recognition, but we also want to see adherence to these principles that I've outlined. So I can't give you an exact date, but that's going to be right on the front line of the agenda to discuss with the Secretary Baker, whom I talked to just a few minutes ago, and he filled me in a little on this question of his talks in all these different republics. But I need to sit down with him, with General Scowcroft, and others, and then we will be talking more about timing.
There will be a recognition.
Well, as I've indicated, there will be. I mentioned this about the Ukraine, but there are certain things that have to be resolved. And what we're not trying to determine with finality how that area is going to look. These people are elected. These people are elected. Now they sit down with each other and sort it out. They don't need the United States to intervene in the internal affairs of a republic or as in relations between the republics themselves. So it's just going to take a little bit of time. But the Baker trip is very useful. I am in touch, as you know, with Gorbachev, with Yeltsin. We receive visitors all the time here, and we're watching it very, very closely. And hopefully, in terms of humanitarian aid and medicines playing a very constructive role. This gentleman was on his feet, and I recognized two at once.
Talking about jobs, how soon do you want the future agreement with Mexico and Canada to be completed? And are you going to talk to the Asian leaders about the construction of trade blocks like the North American trade blocks?
Well, I'm sure they'll be interested in our view in that. And yes, I'm perfectly prepared to discuss it with them. I believe this agreement should move, getting a fair trade agreement with Mexico, or what we call the NAFTA, the North American Fair Trade Agreement, should be reached as soon as possible. And with the able president of Mexico, Carlos Salinas, I agreed this week, or just a few days ago, that we would try to get a bracketed text to present and to work with by the end of January or sometime in January. There was a wild bunch of stories around here that did not reflect my views, saying that we didn't want to get this trade agreement finished. And this gives me my first press conference opportunity, although I think I've responded to questions on it, to say that is not true. We want an agreement, a good agreement, as soon as possible. I am not going to send an agreement to the Congress can't be passed. I'm not going to send, in other words, a bad agreement. We're in close touch with Congress, but I want to get it done. And you know why? I'm all for trade, more trade with Mexico, but I want to help the American economy. And one way to do it is to create the additional jobs that will come from expanding our own markets abroad. And I also think that it's in Mexico's interest. So put me down as still very enthusiastic and pressing forward just as fast as we can on this matter for a good agreement. And I cite that because we're not going to just kind of get an agreement for an agreement's sake. Does that answer it?
Yeah. What is the strategy to deal with the Democrat leadership in Congress?
Well, as you know, many of the Democrats in the Congress strongly supported this fast-track authority, which at least gave some visibility to the fact that they agree with me that a fair trade agreement would be in our benefit. I mean, and I think they also know that Mexico has come a long, long way and doing a first-class job down there, that administration. And so I don't immediately start from the assumption that Congress doesn't want an agreement. I think they're like I am on this question. They want an agreement, but they want to be sure it's fair. Now, there are some forces, I would cite organized labor, who are opposed to the very concept of a fair trade agreement. But we have to take that on, and the way to take it on is to get a good agreement and get Congress to understand, which I'm convinced they will if we get a good one, that this is in the interest of the American worker, as well as better environment and many other things that I think will come from a fair trade agreement. On the aisle back here.
I'd like to ask a question about Haiti, and then one about Cuba.
Sure, follow on. Neighborhood follow on, okay. It's a segue question.
I thank you for giving a press conference for the foreign press.
Well, no, thank you, sir, because I do think, well, let me put it this way, and then I'll get to your two questions. it's very helpful for me to have this opportunity to at least spell out why we are doing this, to have the peoples to whom we'll be visiting particularly understand, and then for the rest of the press corps that come from other countries, I'm glad to have this opportunity to express the broad foreign policy objective. So it's as far as I'm concerned, it's a plus, but thank you for your kind words, and shoot, Haiti and then Cuba.
Yes, sir. Haiti, what we see a solution, sir. The problem is the Haitian refugees are not being sent back, but is there a solution to the problem?
Well, the solution to the problem, and it is one that I personally have been working on, I spent, I don't know how many minutes on the telephone yesterday, but closer to an hour than a half, with Carlos Andres Perez of Venezuela, talked at length to Brian Mulroney in the last few days, Canada trying to be helpful in this regard, and the answer is to have the duly elected leader of Haiti return to Haiti. Our interest is not in trying to say who's going to run Haiti. Our interest is this. There was a democratic process. A man was elected. He was overthrown. The hemisphere is moving towards democracy, and Haiti started moving back towards totalitarian dictatorship. We have a keen interest in that. So does Carlos Andres Perez, a great leader, democratic leader to our south. And so what I'm talking to him about is how do we facilitate Aristides' return? Now that boils down also to another, there's another part of that, and that is who is the government going to be? Who will be the prime minister? And therein we have some difficulties. I say we do, therein Haiti has some difficulties. And that is something that's being talked about right now. We are backing the OAS. We backed them in sanctions. We backed them in their diplomacy. And we will continue to thank them and back them in that regard. United States, once again, and again, I want to sound chauvinistic, we have a disproportionately important role here for a lot of reasons, trade being one of them. And we are trying to use that influence, if you will, working with democratic leaders for the return of Aristide. Therein lies the answer. And our policy on immigration is well known. Those who flee for political political persecution should be granted haven. Those who leave for purely economic reasons are not entitled to harbor under our laws. But the answer to it is not that. The answer is this solution that I've just told you about, the return of Aristide under conditions that democracy has a chance to continue and to strengthen. You say you don't know what'll come out of it? At the risk of sounding pretentious, I think I do know what'll come out of it. What will come out of it is democracy and freedom for the people of Cuba. And you just have to look at the neighborhood. Look at the countries to the south that have moved towards democracy away from totalitarianism. Fidel Castro is swimming against the tide. There is no way that you can oppress people forever and keep down their aspirations for freedom. And the beautiful thing about Cuba is because of the industry of those people, and because of the affection that a lot of Americans have for the people of Cuba, Cuba, once free and once under democracy, will have a real shot at forward movement in terms of helping their people through a reinvigorated economy. There's no question about that. It could be the success story of the 90s if Castro would permit the freedom and democracy that the people want. And in the meantime, dialogue, there's no point in my talking to Castro about that. I mean, he knows the United States position. He knows the pressures he faces all over the world to permit his people the very freedom that others have died for around the world. So what's the point of my talking to him? All I tell him is what I'm telling you. And to give the people the freedom that they want. And then you'll see the United States do exactly what we should. Go down, lift those people up and say, we want to help you. And it wouldn't be just the government. You'd have all kinds of private investment move into Cuba that would offer those people an increased standard of living, great hope for their families, freedom of religion, freedom of elections, all these things. So it's not all bleak. The man cannot sustain swimming against the tide. We get tired. Something will happen. And then these people will be free.
Question on GM, sir. As you know...
What country do you represent, young man? Come on. All right, one American. Shoot.
As you know, Mr. President, General Motors announced yesterday that they were closing 21 plants and eliminating 74,000 jobs. A similar restructuring was announced a couple of weeks ago by IBM. Do you expect this trend towards downsizing among the major corporations to continue? And if so, where will the jobs that are being eliminated come
from? Well, one thing it'll come from is creating new businesses, probably more small businesses. And that's why we do need to put more incentive into our own economy. I don't know what individual businesses are planning to do. I do no, did notice that Mr. Stemple talked about attrition, filling, you know, a downsizing due to attrition, which I think is, I hope it works out that way, because it is the compassionate approach and the correct approach. But I can only tell you that we can create an awful lot of more jobs, just through what I'm talking about here today. And that, therein lies the answer, job retraining, but then creation of new jobs. Now I'm going to take two more questions and leave. There's one right there, and one on this side, the lady in the back, right here with the specs. Okay.
Mr. President, your administration has blamed before the progress of this process to the flexibility of Israel in these negotiations and to the freezing of building settlement on the West Bank. What's your assessment, Mr. President, to the Israeli flexibility in this talks? And are you going to approve the $10 billion loan guarantee in next January, especially that Prime Minister Shamir continued to build settlement on the West Bank?
Well, no decision has been taken on the last matter. No final decision at all. What was the first part of it? I mean, I'm sorry, I missed the first part of the question. I know it related to settlements, but...
Has the administration have linked the progress in the peace process and the flexibility of Israel to the $10 billion loan guarantee?
Well, we haven't made such linkage, but we've stated very clearly what our position is on settlements. I don't think I'll reiterate it because I tried to spell it out to this gentleman back here. We have said that settlements are counterproductive to peace, and some in Israel happen to agree with us on that, as a matter of fact. But having said that, there are things that the Arab countries should do on their own to move forward towards getting the climate ready for a successful conclusion of the peace talks. This is the last one right here. Oh, no, wait a minute, I told her. Second to last one. Now, you're going to be the last one. Go ahead. I got to get out of here.
The democracy is the Republic and the Soviet Union are entitled to. And you talk about the freedom the people of Cuba are entitled to. What about the Palestinians, where are 2 million living under Israeli occupation?
One of the reasons we brought the parties together in a historic meeting in Madrid with Palestinians present was to have that question addressed and resolved in a peaceful manner. And so I would simply refer you to those talks wherein and therein lies the real answer. It isn't going to be done by acts of violence on one side or another. It ain't going to be done by the enormous frustration that leads to terrorism or whatever. It is going to be done at the negotiating table. And thank God it has started. And our role, keep the parties there and have them discuss the final resolution of the question that has now been asked to me three times. And it's been asked to me three times because it really gets to the heart, one of the subjects that gets to the heart of the peace process. So our role will be to try to continue to be the catalyst for peace. And now we run over by several minutes, but this is the final question.
Mr. President, I'm going to ask you a question about the most populated country in Asia, China. There's an election going on in Taiwan right now. The core of the debate is the independence of Taiwan. If such a thing became reality, you think the United States would change its China policy, one China policy?
That question is too hypothetical. Everyone here that keeps up with these matters is familiar with our obligations under the Shanghai Communique. I also believe when you take a look at, well, we'll wait and see what happens in the elections, but that question will be resolved, it seems to me, hopefully by these differing parties talking, and we'll just see what happens. But I'm not going to guess what might or might not take place in an election. That's for the, you know, them to decide over there, and then we will see. The big thing is we want peace in that area. We don't need any more tensions in that area, and I know that there's strong feeling on Taiwan, continues to be, that it is, as they have said all along, a part of China. They've maintained they were China for a long time, as you know. So that has to be sorted out over there, not here in the United States. May I say this to all of you, whatever, no, too late, sorry. This is a Merry Christmas or a Happy Holiday send-off to y'all, but really, I mean it. You know, you follow the debate in this country, and you know that the United States has got some tough economic times, and you know the problems that exist out there with some of the countries whose journalists are here today, thank heavens. But it is a very special time in the United States, and I just wanted to wish all of you a very Merry Christmas, very Happy New Year, very Happy Holidays. Whatever your religion, I hope you feel when you're in this country, the spirit of peace on earth and goodwill that we Americans think come about no matter what our problems are. So thank you and have a great holiday. And I've enjoyed this opportunity very much. Thank you.